Hi, Stuart Mitchell again. You know, some years ago, I was in Cotonou, Benin. For those of you who don't know African geography real well, Benin is that next country after Nigeria as you come across that arm of Africa that runs from east to west and sticks out into the Atlantic. And while I was in Cotonou, I discovered, much to my surprise, that I was to be one of the speakers at this very large conference. So I spent some time in the Green Horse Hotel, lying on my bed, asking the Holy Spirit, what do you want me to talk about? Well, the title of the conference was The Church of Africa Responding to the Challenge of the Great Commission in the New Millennium. And so the Holy Spirit said, I should talk about the Great Commission. And I said, great, what do you want me to say about it? And he said, let's start by talking about what it's not. And I said, well, that's simple enough. It's not a commission to make converts. It's not a commission to build churches. It's not a commission to make church members. It's a commission to make disciples. He said, that's right. And I said, but Lord, if I tell them that, they're going to ask me, if none of those things is a disciple, then what is a disciple? And he took me to the fourth chapter of Ephesians, where much to my surprise, I discovered that apostles and prophets and pastors and teachers and evangelists are not the ones who do the work of the ministry. Rather, they are the hardware store, the Home Depot, the Castorama, the big store that equips the saints so that they have what they need to do the work of the ministry. And it's the saints who do the work that builds the church. So I said, oh, so you're telling me that the process of making a disciple is the process of equipping someone to do the ministry, the work of the saints. He said, right. And I said, well, Lord, if I tell them that, they're going to ask me, equipped with what? And that's when I began to see that there are some fundamental basic tools that if they are present in a man or woman's life, then the man or woman is equipped for the work of the ministry. And that ministry, of course, is the work of making disciples themselves. And so I began to listen to him and talk with him about what are the basic required tools for doing the work of the ministry. And he began to show me a whole set of tools that are the basic equipment. Now you'll notice that I always talk about it as just the basic equipment. It's not completely equipped. I'm still, having been walking with the Lord for more than 50 years, I'm still gaining new equipment from time to time as I go through the process of learning better how to minister to the needs of the saints. But rather, it's the basic equipment that means that a man or woman can be entrusted with the responsibility to care for his own disciples. And in that context, then, I want to go through these tools with you over these next few recordings. And as I go through them, I want you to remember one basic truth. All of the equipping process, all of the tools, everything about the church only works in the context of relationships. We cannot substitute programs for relationships. We cannot substitute meetings for relationships. We cannot substitute teaching for relationships. All, every single bit of the church works in the context of relationships. In fact, I quip often, all ministry, all service to other human beings crosses a bridge of relationship. And if the bridge of relationship is just a tiny weak bridge, then only a small amount of service can pass across that bridge. Ah, but if the bridge is a strong, sturdy bridge of relationship, then very heavy things can be sent across the bridge in service to the ones that we are called to serve. So everything we talk about in the context of these videos is all going to be in the context of relationship. Sadly, as I look around the church, I discover that most of us do not know how to build relationships. We don't know how to be safe people for other people to build a relationship with, and we don't know how to encourage others to open up and allow us to build a relationship with them. In fact, most people who go to the local bar in your neighborhood probably know more about how to build safe relationships than the people who attend Sunday morning meetings at your church building. Why? Because in the local bar, about the only way you can get judged when you first enter the bar is if you go and use the restroom and then walk out of the bar without buying a drink. And then you'll be judged to be a cheap so-and-so. But if you come to the local church meeting, sadly, about the only way that you can avoid being judged is go and hide in the restroom before anyone else sees you. Because otherwise, someone will judge you for how long your hair is, someone will judge you for how long your skirt is, someone will judge you for whether you wear a tie, someone will judge you for whether you wear a tie. That's the wrong color. It's almost impossible in most local churches to walk in and walk out without having someone judge you. And yet, the fastest way to make a relationship seem unsafe is to let other people know that you are judging the people around you, because nobody wants to be judged. And yet everybody wants to be loved. So one of the most important skills for you to practice and learn to develop is to practice learning how to be a friend, withhold judgment, recognize that other people are not like you, but be a safe person for them to be who they are, knowing that having expectations that people who are not followers of Jesus are going to act like people who are followers of Jesus is absolutely nonsense. And yet, we do it all the time. We do it in church meetings. We do it in society. We do it in government law making. We do it in all sorts of ways. We try to create rules and expectations of people's behavior that convince them that the only way that's right for them to behave is like we think Christians behave. You know, Jesus himself did not behave like the religious leaders thought he ought to behave. He did things that, from their point of view, were absolutely outrageous. Why, he even healed people on the Sabbath. His disciples ate grain that they picked in the field on the Sabbath. What is wrong with this man that he didn't know how to honor the Sabbath and keep it holy? He was judged and found wanting. Time after time after time. What we have to understand is that our internal standards of behavior are not the things that do or even should govern other people's lives. Let go of your need to make rules for other people and learn to accept them as who they really are. I'd like to warn you that I'm changing the subject a little bit now, because there's something else that I want to just focus your attention on for a few minutes. And that is, why do I keep talking about making disciples? Well, the big reason is because that's what Jesus told us to make. He said, go into the world and make disciples. He said, those disciples that you make, go into the world, make disciples, and teach them and baptize them. But what do we do? The church organization as a whole goes into the world and it teaches everyone. It teaches everyone things that they should not be able to understand. And then it takes the ones they can get to hold still for a little while and they baptize them. But the one step they've left out is discipling anyone. Why? Because discipling takes an investment of self and it takes time. Jesus himself could only invest his life enough, take time enough, to disciple about a dozen men. Personally, I don't think I'm quite as gifted as Jesus was. So I don't really expect myself to be intensely discipling more than at most about 10 men at any one time. Now, once men have matured, we can use less hands-on discipling for them, and we can help other people in addition to those first 10. But initially, probably you or I could not handle more than discipling 2 or 3 people at the most. Why? Because discipling is a lifestyle that invests my life and my spirit in other people. And if I don't have enough time and life and spirit to invest in them, then I need to keep going back to the Lord and receiving more from him. I need to keep going back to the one who disciples me and keep receiving more so that I have more to give. If you read the New Testament as a whole and you read it fairly, what you begin to see is that there's this entire pattern of disciple making. Jesus discipled men. His disciples discipled men. Paul discipled men. He discipled men like Timothy. He tried to disciple John Mark, but the relationship just didn't work. So Barnabas took over discipling John Mark, and John Mark grew up to be a man who wrote the first of the Gospels. Paul discipled Titus. Paul discipled many different people, and he commissioned many of them, as the Lord ordained them, to be apostles. And yet, we don't really think that discipling is the way to go. Why not? Perhaps it's because we understand the end of the process. You see, when Jesus got to the end of the process of discipling these men, they were all sitting about one day, and Philip spoke up. And Philip said, "Hey, Jesus, if you would just have the Father come and sit here beside you, then we would believe. We would be satisfied." And Jesus, you can just hear him shaking his head and saying, "Oh, Philip, 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 I've been with you all this time. Man, don't you get it? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. What you see in me is what you would see in the Father." Well, remember I told you that there's this important verse in my life that says, in the same way the Father sent Jesus into the world, that's the way Jesus is sending us into the world. So when I get to the end of the process of discipling a man, when I have poured spirit and life into him for 2 or 3 years, and he has seen how I treat my wife and how I treat my children and how I pay my bills and how I handle money and how I handle people and how I deal with people who attack me and how I deal with people who come to me to receive ministry. When he's seen all those things about my life, I still have to be able to sit down and look him in the eye and say, "Brother, if you've seen me, you've seen what Jesus is like." Now, if that doesn't scare you as much as it scares me, you really don't understand what a responsibility is to be able to say that. That's why it's so important as we walk out this relationship with our disciples to remember the importance of saying, "I was wrong, please forgive me." To remember, we do make mistakes. And when we make mistakes, if we'll go to our disciples and show them, "I made a mistake and this is why it was wrong," then they are able to distinguish between what's our faith and what's our foolishness. And in that context, we equip them so that when the time comes, they can sit down with us and say, "You know, man, I see Jesus in you. I understand what he's like now." It's a very large responsibility that we face, but it's also a very joyous one. It's one that allows us to pour out love in such a way that people's lives are built and transformed and encouraged. Let's love people. I love you, so I'll remain his, thus yours.